I want to know how you got through the typhoon.
Well, the typhoon was real scary. We went up and down, and the barometer, I think, dropped below 25 inches, and winds were, up to, 150, 160 miles an hour, and we headed into the sea, which is about 75 foot high, and the ship, as she went through those, you know, you have expansion joints in the ship, and we could hear the old ship stretching out to the fullest on the expansion joints.
Oh, goodness.
Joints, and it seemed like it just stood there and shook for a minute and relaxed and went. And we keep doing that every time we went through a big wave or a big crest.
Goodness. And you didn't lose anybody over the side.
No, but the sea, once we got turned into it and got the sea on our stern, it cleaned off some of the lifeboats on the rear end by where they would be hit by the waves. It just raised them up like they were cork and then smashed them on the deck.
Oh.
They smashed the, broke some of the cables holding lifeboats in their davits.
My goodness.
And we had a certain amount of equipment that wasn't tied down and floated around and had to be pushed into place and then lashed down with lines.
Did it flood much of the ship? Did you get much water in the ship?
No, we didn't get much water. It was only when someone opened the door or something like that and a wave came by and water came in. The mess cooks, they had made a great big box of ham sandwiches. The coffee was cold, of course, but we had ham sandwiches to eat. And I think I was on the deck for about 12 to 14 hours.
What were you doing? Trying to navigate?
Trying to just keep the ship. We had a coxswain on the wheel, but I mean, you were there to be sure that everything was going right the way you wanted it to go.
Yeah.
And then we were going into the storm, and eventually we got into the eye of the typhoon, and that's where everything was quiet, and that's when the barometer hit its lowest, and I had a call from one of my fellow officers from the engine room. He was standing, and he was wondering what was happening with, they were having a hard time keeping a vacuum, I had to tell him that we were in a vacuum, minus vacuum.
He was trying to keep a vacuum in the engine,
in,
right?
In the condensers. I think it was where we're having our trouble, and also the boilers were...
The boilers, that's what I was trying to say.
Uh-huh. Anyway.
Goodness. Of course, then after you hit the eye of the storm, you hit the storm again.
Yeah, and then we started to go out on the other side. That's when we had the ocean hit the lifeboats on the starboard rear quarter. And pick them up and smash them just like they were so much kindling.
Goodness. There you went
but,
through.
The wind, where it hit the ship, it acted just as well, and blowing the water against the side of the ship, there were spots that looked like it had been sandblasted.
I'll bet.
Well, from there we went on into Shanghai and tied up at a dock.
And you were there for how long then?
Oh, for about a month, I guess it was, something like that. Then I...
And what were you doing while you were there?
Oh,
just...
We just were sitting more or less waiting. Well, I was waiting for enough time to come around so I could get discharged. I had enough time in that I could have been discharged, but Captain wanted me to stay on until after I got my relief.
Until someone came and got, you know.
The hospital quarters were the finest the Navy had to offer. I don't know how big my stateroom was, but it was, I had a double bunk in there, but I was the only one using a stateroom. I had a desk, a place, and a place guy could wash and shave.
So that was nice.
It was right around the corner from where the showers were.
So how was the food on this ship?
The food on this ship was excellent.
Now on this ship, it was a hospital ship, so you had, what kind of medical services were there?
Well, I think we could have performed almost any kind of medical service because we had a group of doctors on that, I don't know, we must have had at least 20, maybe more doctors on that were just going along for a ride, most generally. And they could do almost any kind of operation, and they could make eyeglasses. They could also have a dentist where he could pull teeth if he wanted to.
So you had, there were surgical?
Yes, surgical.
Lab or? Yeah. Galleries, whatever.
We had all kinds of special orthopedic surgeons, urologists.
Just top of the line, whatever you
did. Top of the line. A lot of the officers that went aboard ship, they chose to go aboard ship because they'd been sitting in some post somewhere doing nothing but examining people for this, that, and they were getting bored of their job there, and they wanted to change, so they applied to the Navy to be transferred onto the ship.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have a question here. Describe a fellow soldier or an officer who was significant in your experience.
Well, the first ship I was on, our captain was a reserve, naval reserve, and he'd been to sea all his life, practically. And I think he was a kleptomaniac because he loved anything he could get a hold of, he'd like to grab and save. He liked to do little work, like metal work, making rings, turning rings on a lathe or something like that. He's always in our boat shop doing little things. I had a chief that said, can't we keep him out of here? He was sort of an enjoyable fellow. He was quite a bit older. And had one of the officers that was killed up at Lungay and Gulf. He had been a star football player at LSU, and Lieutenant Bussey, and then one of my good friends is Bob Fisher from St. Louis. He and I went aboard the USS Warren together. We are good friends.
And you've kept in touch?
Well, yes and no. We sort of lost touch in later years.
What did you think of the culture you were fighting? The Japanese.
Well,
that's a hard question.
I didn't know much about the Japanese going into it, other than knowing that they had bombed Pearl Harbor and they were out to take over everything they could, United States and whatever. But we got to thinking that the only good Jap was a dead Jap.
Yeah. They were a threat at that time. So when you came home, when did you come home?
Oh, I left a ship in Shanghai, 1945. I think it was that right after Thanksgiving. I rode a ship back called the Sea Fiddler, and it was an old cargo ship, and boy, it was a rough one. We rode it into Pearl Harbor, and from Pearl Harbor rode it the rest of the way into San Francisco. And from San Francisco, I caught a train out of there to Chicago, where I was discharged. In the meantime, my wife, Lorena, had flown back to Kansas, where I left Chicago, went back to Cimarron, and landed there, I think it was right about a day or so after Christmas, which was, and I had bought a lot of things over in China. And I had a big box built, and then I had it mailed back. When I landed in Frisco, I had it mailed back to Cimarron. So I had brass things, and I had a Mandarin coat for my wife, and they love to do beautiful carved work, and I brought back some boxes that were carved, and I distributed them to different places, and I brought back a junk of which was a ship that they would float on or sail on the rivers. But we stayed there, I guess, for a month or so, and then we went back to Massachusetts, where I had to start to look for a job.
When the war had already ended by the time you got home, where were you when the war in Europe ended? You must have been on the repose.
Yes, I was in Europe. We were in New York City.
Okay.
So, New York City really, really blossomed out. They celebrated. And, but,
yeah. So, how did you feel when you heard about that?
Well, we still had the war in the Pacific, and I was still pretty well committed where I was going to be and where I was going to have to go and spend the rest of the war.
Then where were you when you heard about the VJ Day? Do you remember that?
I think we were in San Francisco. It just pulled in there. It wasn't too long after VE Day. Mm-hmm. And when the whistles blew, we were just about ready to tie up, and the longshoremen dropped their lines and walked away to celebrate, so we had to put a couple of boats down with sailors in to take our lines in to tie up the dock. It was sort of scary for a few minutes because here we were floating, headed into the dock, and the skipper put everything on reverse, and we held us just sort of standing in the water until we could get some of our lines on the dock.
Did you realize why they had dropped their lines?
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. We,
I bet you guys, bet you were madder than...
they're lucky they were gone when we left, when we got to the dock, I can tell you.
I'll bet.
There were quite a few people who were real unhappy.
I'll bet. Goodness.
I didn't have much use for longshoremen from then on.
I'll bet. Goodness.
Here we were, this big hospital ship.
And they left you high and dry.
Yeah. Well, the only thing you can do is wrap your line around a canister, one of your capstans, or try to warp them in with your winches. That's what we had to do. And also we tried to, some of the small boats, they were almost useless trying to push the ship along.
Man. Okay, well now I'm going to jump back because I forgot to ask you that question. I'm going to jump back. You got home. You got home and you're back in Massachusetts. How did your experience change you? You were going to be a coach. So, the war experience...
My war experience changed my whole life completely because I figured that if I was going to go into teaching, I'd have to go back to school for a while. Mm-hmm. But I'd already had quite a bit of schooling in the Navy on... engineering, and I had that too in college, but we ended up in Boston, and I met a fellow named Rod Darling, who was a person who helped people that had been discharged. So he advised me to go out on what was called a letter campaign, fix up all I knew about myself, put it down, what do you call it now?
Resume.
And he advised me that, hey, asked me what I wanted to be, and I told him, probably an aircraft engineer. So he said, well, we talked a bit. He decided, through our talking, that Well, I should probably go to an accessory engine, accessory aviation type of company, and then maybe engine company, and then may end up in an airframe company. So I set out all these resumes all around, and I ended up getting a good offer from Hamilton Standard, which is a division of United Aircraft. They manufactured propellers, they manufactured accessory controls for aircraft. So I had been advised, well, it says 5 years is a good time in a company, you can learn a lot of things. And so I stayed almost right to the button of 5 years at Hamilton Standard. And in the meantime, I had brought my resume up to date and had resubmitted it to some engine companies. Well, Pratt & Whitney wouldn't touch me because I was working for Hamilton Standard. Because Hamilton Standard and Pratt & Whitney and Command, they were all part of United Aircraft. So I sent a resume to Wright Aeronautical down in Woodridge, New Jersey. And I had a good offer from Woodridge, from their engine division. I went down there and helped design and learn about reciprocating engines for the aircraft. And also I was went into a turbojet where they were designing a Neen engine. And also, then I went into, we got into a military program of where we were designing and testing ramjet engines. And the ramjet was supposed to be on, I think it was a Navajo missile made by North American. I don't know. Curtis Wright had built a big facility for testing ramjet. I had gone out to Wright-Patterson for testing out there too, and Tullahoma, Tennessee, and Dangerville, Texas, different places for the testing. Then 5 years was up, and everything at Wright Aeronautical didn't seem exactly right for me of what was going on, because manufacturing started taking over the company and cutting way back on engineering development work. So I thought, hey, this may be the time to change again. So I sent resumes out to like Boeing, and then also to North American and Douglas. Boeing came, and I went to into New York and was interviewed by a fellow from Boeing, and he said, I can't give you an offer, but says, can we fly you out to Seattle for an interview? So I went through that, and next thing I knew, I was on the road out to Boeing. And we ended up there the rest of our life. We first rented a house down overlooking the Sound, and then we bought a house out in Bellevue and lived there for until we retired, and then we had moved down to Ocean Shores where we are still retired.
I think, is there anything else you'd like to add that you can think of?
No, but I have to thank the Navy for what I obtained in the line of education and from them, and also I didn't keep up my Naval Reserve, but I probably should have. I oftentimes regretted this that I didn't, but I would say I had almost 5 years in. I could have stayed in the reserve, and it would have given you another point for retirement. That's about it.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for talking with me.
You're welcome.